Hey there, welcome to Third Thursday, Lunch and a Divorce Lawyer. I'm attorney Peter Olson, Chicago Family Law Group. Thanks for joining us this month. This month we have an exciting guest, Tiffany Thorstein with Family Forward Law LLC. Do I have your firm right, Tiffany?
You do, that's correct.
How long has your firm been in existence?
So I've had the firm for about 3.5 years, and before that did different areas of law and finally kind of found my happy place when I set up Family Forward Law. So.
Great. And you are nice enough to jump on here to talk about assisted reproductive technology law. Is that a thing?
It is a thing. It's a big area, and it has a lot of overlap with, you know, domestic relations that you handle, adoptions cases, and just kind of everyday life with people growing their families nowadays.
Wow. It's people all around the world, that's the joy of social media, isn't it? But I think it's, you know, a bit of a layperson audience, you know, where this isn't a CLE here. I'm Joe off the street, assisted reproductive technology law, kind of real world. What is it?
So it covers everything from egg donation, sperm donation, embryo donation, gestational surrogacy. It can even cover divorces where people are fighting over embryos and what happens to them that they've created. And it's really just kind of family growth through means other than conception through intercourse. And it may be a married couple that has to use a gestational surrogate. It may be a same-sex couple, or it may even be a single individual, you know, a woman that has a sperm donor in order to have a baby, and kind of whose rights, who cares for that child long-term, who's financially responsible for that child, who gets to hold the child when it's born at the hospital immediately after birth, if it's being carried by a gestational surrogate. But that's not who's going to be mothering the child for the rest of its life. So
there's a lot there. It sounds like I need to be a little bit more of a scientist than I am. I didn't even realize just yesterday, because right, one of the laws we deal with in child custody parentage cases is the Illinois Parentage Act. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize there was a whole article on, I'm forgetting what the heading on it was, but there was a whole article on maybe this topic.
Children of assisted reproduction. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at that law all the time, right? That's kind of what governs unmarried parents, even in a traditional, you know, child created through sexual intercourse sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, custody, child support, parenting time. And little did I know there was a whole article on assisted reproductive technology.
Yeah.
In the Parentage Act. So, mm-hmm. So that's good to know. So could we kind of break down almost just a totally generic example, I guess?
Yeah.
Can we, do you want to start the hypo or should I? I mean, I'm just thinking like, I'll use myself. I'm a man in my mid 40s, and me and my wife, and I am married, but so that part isn't hypothetical, but it is the hypothetical that then we're struggling to have children traditionally, and now we might come to you because we want to start a family. Is that a good jumping off point?
Yeah, that is. So a lot of times it would end up starting with a fertility clinic, and your fertility clinic is going to, you know, you've been trying to have a child for a couple years and it's just not happening. And you're trying to figure out, you know, what's wrong. Is it that the woman is too old or isn't ovulating or eggs aren't working? Or is it that there's kind of a male sperm issue? Or is it that they're conceiving and they keep miscarrying? You know, and just trying to kind of figure out what's happening, and are we going to be able to even have children together, or are we going to have to look at other options? And so a lot of times people will then go to a fertility clinic and try to explore, you know, what's the right option for us. And the doctors, a lot of times, are the ones that say, you know, you need to look into an egg donor, you need to look into a sperm donor, or you know, the woman has some sort of uterine issue that she's not able to actually carry the baby. And even though the baby could be 100% genetically related to, let's say, you and your wife, Your wife might not be able to carry the baby, and you might have to look at having someone else carry your embryo. So you've got eggs from a woman, you've got sperm from a man, and those two together are what create your embryo. Okay. And the technical terms are kind of oocytes, your egg and your sperm, but you know, the how everyone knows them is women ovulate and you have an egg, and that's kind of what she gives. And then men have their sperm, and that fertilizes the egg, and then you create an embryo. And so that can be created in a lab. That can be related or unrelated to the people eventually having the baby. In Illinois, in order for it to fall under our law of gestational surrogacy, if you have someone else carry the baby for you, at least one of the intended parents has to be related. So, you know, if it were you and your wife, either you would have to give the sperm for the baby, or she would have to give the egg, or it would have to be both of you providing the embryo for this non-related party to carry.
Okay. I'm following you so far. No, I mean, seriously, I'm getting it. I think there is a whiteboard feature in Zoom, but I don't know how to use that. So let's go down the track a little farther. Is there a most common situation, you know, in other words? Can we just pick one just because for sake of time? Now,
sure.
My wife and I have created an embryo. Is that right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now we need a woman to carry it. Is that correct?
Yep. A gestational carrier or a gestational surrogate would be what they would be called. Mm-hmm. And so Illinois has the Illinois Gestational Surrogacy Act, and that's what governs it in our state. And so gestational surrogacy is not legal in every state. There are some states that absolutely do not allow a woman to carry a baby that is unrelated to them for another couple. So it's kind of an alternative to adoption, but in other states where it's not allowed, that woman would have to carry her own baby and then give that baby up for adoption. Whereas in Illinois, you know, the baby could be related to the two of you 100%. And your wife just wouldn't have to be the one carrying and birthing it.
I see. So then what do I do then? I mean, what is kind of the next step then? So now we've located, is that sort of perhaps part of what the fertility clinic, so my wife and I need somebody to carry our embryo. Mm-hmm. Where do we find that person?
So there are a lot of options. I mean, there are agencies that connect gestational carriers to intended parents. You know, the agencies kind of provide certain guidelines for compensation. So in Illinois, it can be compensated surrogacy. In other countries, sometimes it's altruistic surrogacy. So like in Canada, the birth parents can pay the medical expenses, but they cannot compensate that individual. So in Illinois, it's really viewed as a service. So you are paying this woman for the service of carrying your future baby. So it is compensated, and it all kind of depends on the relationship. So some people have family members, like a sister, a cousin, someone like that, who's willing to carry this baby for them. They know that they've been struggling. They've already had their own child. So that's one of the requirements in Illinois, is that they have to have had their own child. They have to be over the age of 21. And they have to not have any sort of medical complicating factor that could potentially result in an issue with the pregnancy. So the gestational surrogate, once you find that person, they also have to go through a bunch of medical screening, generally with your fertility clinic. And that person has to be medically cleared to be able to carry your baby. So, you know, there are always risks in pregnancy, but that's kind of one of the ways to screen out these risks. And you're not just kind of putting this woman through a lot of stress that's going to cause a health issue that they didn't previously know about. So, you know, it may be from your clinic that you're going to find them. It may be someone that you know. Agencies can be expensive. They charge a fee to match, to monitor those two individuals, to make sure everything is going well. So, you know, people also post ads on Facebook or Craigslist.
Yeah, it seems like an area where there would be right? Yeah. The, what would you say, above board market, and then, you know,
yeah.
Social media, yeah, Craigslist, yeah, I mean,
it's whatever. Just something to be cautious about, you know, I mean, it's, there's a lot of money that goes into fertility treatment itself, and then the compensation of the gestational carrier, and the medical expenses of the pregnancy, because in Illinois, you're required to have health insurance coverage for a gestational surrogacy's pregnancy, but that means that the intended parents are paying potentially a monthly health insurance policy that this person might not have had through their own employer. Right. You know, in addition to the monthly compensation, you're having to discuss things about, you know, if there's an issue, a genetic defect with the baby that's discovered, who gets to decide if that pregnancy continues? And, you know, you make those, you have those conversations before anything happens, because for religious reasons, for, you know, ethical reasons, some people may be okay with ending a pregnancy if the child is unlikely to survive after birth because of a genetic issue. Right. And some people may be absolutely against it. You know, so it, those are all things that have to be discussed at the outset, and both parties have to be represented by independent legal counsel before any transfer happens. So that's okay. A really big one in Illinois. So, you know, I may represent the intended parents, and then a different attorney has to review the agreement and work directly with the gestational carrier. And if she is married, her spouse, and that spouse also has to agree to all of the terms of the agreement. Because at the end of it, you know, as you know, there's a presumption that a child born to a woman during the course of a marriage is a child of that marriage, you know, belonging to that husband and wife.
Right.
And so the husband also has to agree that they will not make any claim to this child, even though they're not genetically related to it, that they agree to relinquish any and all assumed rights at the time of birth. You know, so, and that they agree to kind of abide by some of the guidelines that the fertility clinic is also going to be asking about. So, you know, certain things like not having intercourse after the transfer so that you're unlikely to be creating your own child.
Right.
So, you know, things like that, and both sides have to agree, both sides have to have independent legal counsel, both sides have to undergo a psychological background check as well. So they have to meet with a therapy provider who is familiar with gestational surrogacy, kind of the risks, you know, it's an emotional thing having a woman carry a baby and then giving that baby to another couple. And so, you know, making sure that woman is stable enough, really understands what they're doing, understands that, you know, usually your gestational surrogate and your intended parents keep a relationship after that. They develop a strong bond during this. They talk a lot during this. They, you know, continue a relationship after the baby is born, but there's no requirement that they have to. And so if the intended parents at some point in time change their mind and say they don't want any more contact with the gestational surrogate, they could cut off all contact, and that carrier could have, you know, no options to be able to see how this child that they carried for 9 months is growing and doing in the future. Right. So, yeah.
There's a lot there. That's, boy, I am following you. Yeah, both have legal representation. That's interesting, because I don't think that's, I'm no expert, I've handled a few in my career on an adoption. The parent allowing the adoption to happen does not have the requirement to have legal representation, do they?
They don't. So with adoptions, if someone is contesting an adoption, they have the right to appointed counsel because it's addressing termination of parental rights.
Right.
And so, you know, termination in Illinois, whether it's juvenile court or adoption, requires that the court appoint an attorney. But there's no requirement that if you're contesting an adoption, you have to get that attorney appointed, or you have to retain an attorney. You could represent yourself and contest it, or you can just agree to the adoption, sign those consents or surrenders, and you don't have, you know, you have the right to counsel, but you don't have to have counsel.
Right. So what is the, so if we're going down our hypothetical a little farther, okay, my wife and I have now matched up with, you know, Miss Smith, a generic 28-year-old who's healthy and psychologically appropriate and whatever other standards. She's had her own children, I think you said.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's the legal side?
So the legal side is really a very large contract.
What are you doing for, what are you doing, I guess, if you're representing my wife and I? Yeah, mm-hmm. What's the picture?
Our first thing is really going to be kind of meeting and figuring out what your relationship with the gestational surrogate is. What compensation have you guys discussed with the gestational surrogate? So that may include a monthly amount to, you know, provide for her housing, her food. So, you know, under the Parentage Act, it requires parents to essentially pay for the care of their children from the time of birth. Really, there's an expectation that you're providing for your children from conception. And then once they're born, you have to continue providing for your children. And so what we're really saying, because you're not purchasing the embryo, you're not purchasing the baby, you are paying them for their service, for the pain, the suffering, the inconvenience of having to attend medical visits. So when I meet with my clients, you know, we discuss whether there has been a conversation. If it's from an agency, the agency, you know, gives you your list. Here is what you are expected to compensate your gestational surrogate. Things above and beyond that can be negotiated. So once we get kind of those payment terms sorted out, you know, compensation for travel, if they have to travel to a different state to have the transfer, you know, paid medical leave for work. So if the employer doesn't have a short-term disability policy and this individual goes on bed rest at the end of their pregnancy and can't work, you know, you're responsible for paying for their lost wages. And that's something that's negotiated. And we make sure that we have that amount or the way that that's calculated in our contract. So, you know, once we kind of get the initial terms out, I am drafting a 40 to 50 page contract for you.
Okay.
That lays out all of these terms, that lays out everything from, you know, what makes you both eligible to even enter into this agreement, which are kind of those age requirements, psychological background checks, you know, healthy, no sexually transmitted diseases, those sorts of things all get laid out. What the agreement is intended for. So it's intended for this other individual to carry an embryo that is made up of DNA from you and your wife, and that they intend to carry that solely for the purpose of providing this child for your future care, control, custody, and that they agree to surrender any and all rights immediately upon birth of that child. So you kind of lay out the way that works. If anything goes wrong during the course of the pregnancy and there's an emergency and it, you know, it ends up being, do you make a decision about the health of the gestational carrier or the baby? And you always make the decision for the gestational carrier. You know, who gets to make that decision if the intended parents can't be reached? So let's say there's some sort of issue with the pregnancy and the doctor has kind of said, hey, you know, here are three options to try to save the baby. There's no risk to the health of gestational carrier, but the doctor kind of gives three options and the intended parents can't be reached. Let's say you and your wife are both at work, you've got meetings, you're at court on trial, something like that. Mm-hmm. And she's at the doctor and this issue comes up and they can't reach you. What happens if she decides, you know, one way at the recommendation of the physician and the baby doesn't make it? You know, right. Who's responsible for that? And the reality is she's not responsible for that because she made a medical decision based on medical advice, but all of that goes into the agreement. What goes into the agreement is also what happens if something happens to you and your wife. Let's say you guys are in a car accident and both pass away before the baby's even born. You know, requiring you to name guardians for the baby so that those guardians can be the individuals that raise the baby and have custodial rights to that child immediately upon birth. You know, and then so all of the compensation factors.
Is the legal or I wrote something down from my deep analysis yesterday, is the agreement the gestational surrogacy agreement? That's what I saw in Article 7 of the, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
So that is the let's call, is that is the contract we're kind of talking about with the 40 pages, I think you said.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's governed by the Illinois Gestational Surrogacy Act. So it lays out very clearly, here are the requirements to make, you know, for these individuals to be eligible. Here is, and it lays out, I think, like 10 different factors of what has to be in the agreement. Right. And compensation is kind of one of those things that you don't have to compensate a gestational carrier. Someone could do it just because they want to help you. But you know, in other states, you can't compensate them. And in other countries, sometimes you can't. And so by allowing compensation, the act notes that, you know, that, that doesn't change the situation. Compensation doesn't make it an invalid agreement. And so, you know, there are certain terms that are required to be in there, and there's a whole lot of extra just to make sure that both sides are protected. So it's, you know, and then once I have that agreement drafted, we have a very long phone call to re-review it, you know, because the attorney within the Illinois Gestational Surrogacy Act, the attorney is required to inform their clients of their rights, responsibilities, obligations. And it's very specific language about exactly what that attorney is required to do and make sure that their clients understand that. And so we review the agreement, you know, essentially line by line in a very long phone call to make sure that everyone knows what their rights and obligations are. So.
Yeah, it looks super deep. Like, what was I thinking about when I was looking at the terminology? And well, what you've said too. I mean, well, and it's like so many of these areas. You always have to think about, like, yeah, what if somebody passes away or something before?
Or even, you know, divorce. We're familiar with divorce, right?
Right.
What happens if you and your wife get divorced before this baby's born?
Right. No, I know there's some cases out there on that fighting over embryos and stuff for sure. So. Just to land the plane a little bit then. So now we're at the hospital and now I have my beautiful baby girl, or maybe I don't have her yet. She's just been born. What's sort of the, you know, how does it end with regard to, you know, now this becoming legally my and my wife's child, just in our little really quick, easy scenario.
So what would happen is that once the agreement is signed and executed by all parties, thankfully the Gestational Surrogacy Act has language that says that if certain certifications are signed, and they're certifications that were created by Illinois Vital Records, so both attorneys have to sign them, all of the parties have to sign them, and then an Illinois licensed physician who, you know, knows the parties and is familiar, they have to sign one confirming that this child is not the child of the gestational carrier and her partner, and that it, that the gestational carrier and her partner are not related. So those forms have to be executed and provided to the hospital where the woman is expected to give birth, originals of those forms to that hospital, and then a copy to Vital Records. And that allows your and your wife's name to actually go on this child's birth certificate immediately upon birth, and to take custody of the child immediately upon birth. So that means you may be in the delivery room if your gestational carrier allows it. In times before COVID, that would happen. Sometimes you guys would be there with her spouse. And so as soon as the child's born, the doctor's handing the baby to you instead of the gestational carrier. You know, and so it's a situation where as long as everyone is updated and involved, hospitals are aware that, you know, family building is a little bit different than it used to be. So as long as all of the paperwork is in place and the hospital allows, and there's no medical issue with the child, a lot of times the intended parents are able to hold that baby immediately and then care for the child. And sometimes they might even have a room at the hospital. They might be paying for that room at the hospital, but they'll have a room at the hospital to be able to be there with the child the entire time. And so after that, your names are on the birth certificate, which is great. But, you know, in our scenario with you and your wife, you're both biologically related to the child, right? So that puts you on equal footing. But if you had a situation where either you or your wife was not biologically related to the child and you had to have a donor, you might have to consider an adoption, even though this is legally your child, you know, because you want to be on equal footing. And so your birth certificate's only a state document. You know, so let's say that you guys move to a different state that doesn't acknowledge gestational surrogacy. And so in that situation, you're going to want to have the judgment of adoption so that another state is going to give that full faith and credit. So, it's, you know, it's kind of a readoption in a sense, because you're already legally related. You don't have to go through all the background checks and all that stuff. There's actually an amendment to the Adoption Act that got passed that allows the judge discretion on whether or not to appoint a guardian ad litem. So this would be one of those situations where you might kind of avoid that extra expense and extra step. And the judge is really just kind of rubber stamping the relationships that are already there But rather than just a state document, you're going to have a court judgment that's given full faith and credit throughout the U.S.
Got it. Well, it's good to hear, at least in the one scenario, you know, it's kind of automatic. I was picturing or thinking about some of the scenarios I deal with, right? A parentage case where the father's not on the birth certificate or something, and, you know, basically that's part of the court case, or an adoption where it's part of the court case. Whereas this sounds like, if it's done right, is a bit more self-effectuating.
Right. Yeah, so the statute's been very well written, and then the Vital Records Act was updated, and then the Administrative Code was updated for vital records. And so everything is in order, that if you submit your documents when you're supposed to, and Vital Records accepts them, and you've advised the hospital that you should be good, and all of your ducks are in a row, and your name should be on the birth certificate, and the child can go home with you. So
real world, this sounds like this would be a, you know, just the bigger circle of it. Assisted reproductive technology kind of law, or the thing, you know, the real thing would be growing, right? I mean, I would just, this is just Peter being semi-informed about different things, but what, people are having children as, well, people are getting married older. That's a fact, right? Demographically. So I think you're having children later.
Right.
I would think some of the same sex marriage, you know, legality that's changed in the last half a dozen years. Is that, I don't know. Am I clueless, or are those some of those things driving probably this becoming more popular, prevalent?
It's definitely becoming a growing field. And I do think a lot of it is out of necessity. You know, I mean, a male couple that is legally married throughout, you know, most of the US now, or a large chunk of the US, they can't have a baby on their own. And a female same-sex couple cannot have a baby on their own. And so, you know, that's part of it. That's a large portion of my clients. And some of it's also single women seeking to have babies later in life, or single men, you know, who are in their 40s or 50s and, you know, don't have a partner. And so even like the sperm donor agreements, I get a lot of people contacting me trying to figure out, you know, they have this friend who is willing to provide their sperm for them to have a baby.
Right.
How do you do that so that they are not on the hook for child support and they don't have a right to visitation? When do you get those agreements put in place? What is the medical process that has to be in place? Because, you know, as you know, the Parentage Act says that children of intercourse are, you know, biologically related to that person, and then there's a responsibility. So it has to be conception through a means other than intercourse in order for it to fall under these kind of donor categories, where we can create a contract, address those issues ahead of time to make sure that these individuals aren't going to have problems down the line.
Got it. And so Tiffany, how'd you get into this exciting nuanced area of law? Tell us why you're passionate about it, or how you got into it.
Yeah. So I think, like most people in adoption and assisted reproduction, we kind of found a personal route there. So I had always been interested in adoptions. I have a couple family members who were adopted. And I've had quite a varied legal career. I started off in plaintiff's personal injury, so had a very strong litigation focus, ended up at the Department of Children and Family Services handling child abuse and neglect. And so I got to see kind of the DCFS adoptions on that side of foster children. So that kind of re-sparked my passion for adoptions. And as I got older in my career, decided that if I was going to stay in law, I wanted to do something I was passionate about. So that kind of pushed me towards adoptions. But then for assisted reproduction, I actually had cancer about 5 years ago. And so my spouse and I were really lucky to go through oncofertility preservation. So from being able to freeze eggs and embryos, it kind of, you know, got me rethinking about this whole field and kind of our future. And so, you know, it's definitely that personal factor. And I think a lot of the attorneys that I've met in the field have either dealt with infertility issues, gone through IVF on their own. And so having that personal experience, I think makes it easier to understand the process and counsel clients. So yeah, it was definitely a personal thing for me. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's huge. I mean, clients can see the empathy, trust, you know, cause hey, I've been in that, whatever that situation. And hey, your ideal client, when we're talking about assisted reproductive technology, or who's your ideal client? Who should call you? I mean, I understand they're different, like little what roots of this tree.
Right.
But I don't know, is there one or a couple who it's like, hey, I'm dealing with a lot of these?
You know, I think anyone looking to grow their family through non-traditional means, whether it's donors or even adoption, kind of having all of the information at the beginning, I think helps people make decisions. And so being able to weigh the cost differences for adoption versus assisted reproduction at the very beginning, I think is helpful. So anyone looking to grow their family through alternative means, is really kind of who would reach out to Family Forward Law to help us move you forward.
So. How can I reach out to you, Tiffany?
Sure. So my law firm website is familyforwardlaw.com. And then my email is my first name, TIFFANY @familyforwardlaw.com.
Sounds good.
Pretty simple.
Total aside, I've always liked your law firm logo. Good logo.
Thanks. I made that.
Oh, wow. Well, hey, I mean, I like it. You have a good background too. So sounds like you know your assistant reproductive technology law, and you're cool with the graphics too, because you have a good background on Zoom and you did your own logo. So
thanks. I made that one too. I'm just an attorney with a creative passion. So,
America needs that creativity, you know, big time, you know. Well, thanks again for joining us, Tiffany. Super
thankful. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thankful for your time. And, I'm definitely referring people to you for this area because it's outside our area, but I think it's sort of a root outside, like one step away from maybe the family law that we practice at Chicago Family Law Group. So thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Peter. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.